Whatever happened to Mrs. Nussbaum?
I've been in a couple of plays recently, and I do television commercials, etc., etc.
My name is Richard Lamparski. About 35 years ago, there was a man by the name of John L. Sullivan who was a big headliner in a thing called Vaudeville. He was also very well known on Broadway for productions such as The Little Show, The Greenwich Village Follies. He's much better known as Fred Allen, still well known. He's always been dead for a number of years now, and he created a number of characters, something called Allen's Alley, and they still are very well remembered today. One I'm sitting next to in her apartment hotel here in Manhattan, and her name is Minerva Pius. Better known, and I don't think she'll resent me for saying that, as Mrs. Nussbaum. Is that right?
That's right, and I don't resent it at all.
I didn't think you would. Tell me first off, are you really Jewish?
Yes, I am.
You are? I thought maybe you were going to say, no, I'm Irish, or... how did you get into doing Mrs. Nussbaum on Allen's Alley?
Well, actually, it was a character I had done from time to time before the format of Allen's Alley, that is, on the Fred Allen program. And when Fred decided on that format, he merely chose that character to put in the alley and called her Pansy Nussbaum, which, you know...
I never heard the first name.
Oh,
was it Pansy?
Pansy.
He also said Mrs. Nussbaum.
Yes. You know, as you know, means nut tree in German.
No, I didn't. I have a friend who has a dog named Pansy. I'll always think
no,
of that.
No, no, I
now.
Mean Nussbaum.
Oh, Nussbaum. No,
means
I didn't know
nut
that.
Tree. And that name was his creation. It was Fred Allen's creation. And I had a husband called Pierre who never appeared. But we talked about him a lot.
Pierre Nussbaum.
Pierre.
Yeah, I remember him very well, too.
Oh, by the way, in one of the routines on the in Allen's Alley, he asked me how I came to marry Pierre. And this was one of Fred Allen's wildest creations, really. I was a housewife who left my home to go to the delicatessen during a snowstorm. And I had gone out through a French window in the apartment. And by the time I got home, the snow was piled so high that I stepped into the apartment above my own. And I was standing at the stove fixing something, coffee or something, for dinner when a strange man put his arms around me. And Fred Allen said in his straight man voice, And what did you do? And I said, well, luckily the stranger is liking cold cuts. And that's how I met Pierre and became Mrs. Pierre Nussbaum.
I wondered how I was going to get you to do that dialect without asking you, because you've been sitting here talking now for a few minutes and you hadn't done it. So use that now anytime you feel, time you want to. Just feel free to go right into it. Well, his shows, even at that time, I remember, usually they reserve this for 20 years later, saying they were before their times. But I can remember even right at the height of their popularity in radio columnists at the time would say, he's way before his time. He really isn't as appreciated as he might be.
He was a very astute man.
Very, because satire was unknown in radio. At least I don't remember any satire other than on Fred Allen.
No. No, I'd say he was
very
unique,
biting political satire without being personal or unkind in any way.
That's right.
We talked about, I mentioned how many characters he introduced. Ajax Cassidy, another member of Allen's Alley, resident of. Senator Claghorn. And did you ever hear from Peter Donald? That was Ajax Cassidy, right?
Yes. Do I ever hear from
mm-hmm.
him? Oh, I see him around occasionally. Ajax Cassidy elicited more complaints than any other. I think there might have been a point to it, too, because he was always represented as a no-good drunk. And that was a little unfair. If you're interested, the Irish and the Scots are the most sensitive groups of people.
Isn't that funny, you know, because the next question I was going to ask you, and this is going to sound posed, and it's not, was, did you have any complaints from perhaps the Anti-Defamation League.
I don't remember any.
Isn't that funny? But I never thought of Ajax Cassidy as being offensive. Of course, I'm not Irish, and I don't drink.
I think perhaps the Irish and the Scots were always represented in a stereotyped way. The Irish were always indigent, and the Scots were always stingy. Well,
now we don't offend anybody, you see, and we don't have the wonderful characters like Mrs. Nussbaum and Senator Claghorn on television that we had on radio, or Titus Moody, for that matter, Parker Finley. Did that begin your career in radio, working in Allen's Alley?
Well, not Allen's Alley.
No, but on the Fred Allen show.
Fred Allen, yes, it did. It began my theatrical career. I was a complete amateur when I went on that program. A friend of mine by the name of Harry Tugend, who is a writer-producer in Hollywood today, wrote for Fred Allen and directed his program. And he got me a job on that. He told Fred that I was the Ruth Draper of radio, and Fred didn't know any radio people. And I still don't know whether I fooled him, but at least I stayed on the program. On the very first program, I did a French lion tamer and a Russian countess. And I asked him at one point if he would mind if I transposed some of the words in the French character. I said it would be better for the dialect. And he was very polite, and he said, oh, not at all. I don't know French, and you're welcome to make any changes. I asked him a second time, and like an amateur, I overdid it. I asked him a third time. And now his voice became acid, and he said, yeah, that'll be all right. And as I walked away, he said, by the way, about the handwriting on the wall, what would you like to do about that?
Did he know you were an amateur?
As I said, I don't know. I never told him I wasn't, and he never charged me with it. Well, I went home, and a week later, I sat thinking of my past glory when the phone rang, and they said, where are you? They neglected to tell me it was a steady job, which it remained for 16 years.
That's how long you were on?
16
yes. years, right to the end.
From 33 to 49.
Another story that the same gentleman told me, see if this is true or not. Mr. Allen, to a lot of people, I think, you know, sounded very cynical always. He had that wonderful quality to his voice, which to many was very funny. But I think a lot of people thought of him as being a cynic and maybe a little bit cranky. But he said that there was no one who was better to down-and-out actors or old vaudevillians than Fred Allen. I don't mean better just being nice to them or saying hello to them. But he said he was very generous. He had a drawer full of envelopes, and they used to come up and for handouts. And he would say, well, I don't know what you're doing up here again. You know, I don't have a lot of money. People think I have a lot of money. I don't have a lot of money. And as he would talk to them, his back was to them. He was going through the drawer, and in the envelope, each envelope had a name on it, and there would be so many dollars in each. And he would say, now, this is the very last. Don't come around here bothering me again.
No, that's quite true.
That's true.
And he was a doer person, but I don't know a better employer. He gave such respect to people who worked for him. This man never opened his mouth to direct one of his actors unless he misread a line on the third or fourth reading. Now, I think that's extraordinary.
It is indeed, because he did guide the entire show. It was his show completely, wasn't it?
That's right, but he felt that director was in the control room for him as well as everybody else. I consider that very, very respectful. Here's a story about Charles Lawton, who was a guest on the program once, and I had known him previously, but Fred hadn't. About 40 minutes before airtime, Mr. Lawton said, can we get a drink anywhere? And I knew he wasn't this kind of person. Well, I knew there was something very bad troubling him, and I took him next door to the Bryant Bar. That was the Columbia Playhouse on Broadway and 53rd. And he wouldn't talk until he had two drinks down him. Then he said, I said, what's troubling you? And he said, how do you know when you're doing all right with Fred? I said, well, I've been working for him for about 13 or 14 years. You know, I still don't know, but I land on the program every year. In other words, he didn't feel it was necessary to pat you on the back or to flatter you, to treat you like a child in any way. I think his attitude toward actors was mature in every way. I'll never, never forget that.
As you probably know, there's a book out recently by Joe McCarthy, published, I think, by Doubleday, which I have. I haven't quite finished it, about Fred Allen's famous letters. But I'm looking for a book on his ad-libs, because that's really what he was most famous for, I think.
Right, and they were never written beforehand, I assure you.
In a live show, it must have been something.
Oh, yes. It was. Perhaps you've heard the one about the eagle.
The eagle?
Yes.
I may have. It doesn't ring a bell.
Well, a man representing himself as a British colonel brought a talking eagle on the program. At this time, the program was an hour long, and there was a feature called People You Didn't Expect to Meet. So the guest that week was the talking eagle. Well, during the first program, he flew up to the tops of those big screens in the 1,100-capacity studio at NBC and failed to make good the colonel's boast that the eagle could talk. So for the repeat broadcast, which we had in those days, a repeat for the West Coast, they tied the eagle's legs. Well, and at the point where the eagle was supposed to speak, apparently this tying of his legs had inhibited himself, that nature asserted itself. And this elicited a 5-minute laugh from this audience of 1,100 people. When the laughter died down, Fred said, I would advise the eagle to stick to the script.
Well, that's gorgeous.
You never heard that?
No, I haven't heard it. All New York has now. That's a beautiful, beautiful story. I wish you'd tell the other story that you mentioned to me when the recorder wasn't off, the other handout story of Fred Allen. There are many of them, but I think that's about the gentleman who showed up at 4.
The man who was due at 4 every Sunday for his handout.
Payday, yeah.
Yes, and this afternoon, the Sunday afternoon, he spent with one of his writers, and on this particular afternoon at 4, the writer was accustomed to this same routine that passed every time the indigent person came and say, why don't you get a job instead of coming up here for handouts? So he always gave him his handout with a little scolding. On this particular Sunday, about 4:30, Fred started pacing the room and muttering to himself. And the writer finally asked, what was the trouble? And he said, 4:30, and that so-and-so hasn't turned up yet. Oh, once we were doing a sketch about a farm. He was a farmer, and I was his wife, and the farmhands and I were always complaining because he didn't give us enough to eat. In the middle of the sketch, I got a frog in my throat and couldn't clear it, and he said, everybody complaining about not enough to eat and you concealing a frog in your throat.
I hadn't heard that one either. I guess his most famous remark was the one about the sincerity to be found in Hollywood. I can't quote it accurately. I'm sure you know the one I mean.
I don't remember it enough to quote it accurately, but
I can begin it, but I'll try. I'll begin it. Maybe someone in the audience can finish it. All the sincerity to be found in Hollywood you could place in the navel of a gannet. We have enough room left over for several sesame seeds and any added few other things.
I don't remember that.
Oh, he also said about Hollywood that it was a lovely place if you happened to be an orange.
Yes, yes.
That was one of his best remembered quotes. He had quite a few things to say about television. He certainly didn't like television, did he?
No, because television wasn't very kind to him. Our first program on television was a shambles. Each member of the alley in this program had his own little revolving set, which was fine, except that when mine was about to come up, I noticed that they hadn't even moved the flats from the back of the stage to form the revolving stage. And I said to the stage manager, "Hi, Mom." He said, "Please, this is our business." Well, Fred had to ad-lib for 4 minutes while they put that revolving table on, and it wasn't funny, and he wasn't funny.
He was on What's My Line, as I recall.
Well, that was much later. He was unable physically to deal with script or cast any longer, so he resorted to appearing on the panel shows.
I remember in the very early days of television, I don't even know if his program had been on television at that time, but he made some remark to the effect of Vaudeville was indeed dead, and they had buried it in a box called a television receiver.
I spent some time in London around 54 and 55, and I got a letter from him in which he said that the omnibus people wanted him to come on the program with his cast to plug his new book. And I wrote back and said that some things were pending for me in London, and I didn't want to leave at the moment, but if he wanted me to make a tape, I'd be very glad to. He wrote back and said that it was just as well that I suggested the tape, because when the Ford Foundation found out how much it was going to cost to bring the three men in the cast into New York from California and me in from London and back, they decided they could get Einstein with John Foster Dulles as his straight man. And he said, "Let me know if you have any trouble about your fee, but I doubt that you will, because as I understand it, the Ford Foundation is dedicated to helping all of humanity."
Now, a lot of people don't know this. In fact, I didn't until I came to visit you today, that you were more than Mrs. Nussbaum on Alan's Alley, on the Fred Allen Show. You did other characters.
Yes, for the last 10 or 12 years of the program, I did all of the female character work. It was impossible in the billing to say Miss Pius and Mrs. Nussbaum, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Have you ever thought afterward that it held back your career at all in theater or television, being tagged with that Mrs. Nussbaum?
Well, not at all, because I had quite a varied career in radio. I worked on soap operas. I worked on straight dramatic shows. I mean, doing straight dramatic roles. I did all kinds of work. So, obviously, I was not typed.
The compliment that you mentioned a little while ago, someone calling you the Ruth Draper of radio, that's about as nice a compliment as you can get, because there was no greater artist than Ruth Draper.
No, nor to me either. But I think that all that the Harry Tugend meant by that was that I was able to do a great many characters, a great many dialects, which Fred liked.
When I was picking up the recorder to come to visit you today, the station manager, who is Icelandic, I've never known anyone who's from Iceland before, but he is, he said, "Well, who are you going to visit today?" And many of the people I interview, he doesn't know, because he's from Iceland, and many of these people are all very American. And I said, "Oh, you wouldn't know her. Her name is Minerva Pius." He said, "Minerva Pius? Oh, it seems to ring a bell." And I said, "Well, you wouldn't know her." He said, "Well, what did she do?" And I said, "She was Mrs. Nussbaum." "Mrs. Nussbaum," he said. And I said, "You know Mrs. Nussbaum?" He said, "Of course, from Allen's Alley." Evidently, that was broadcast all through the 30s and 40s, all the way to Iceland. Did you know that? I didn't.
I didn't know about Iceland. I know that he has a very great audience in England, and had rather, and in Canada. When I went to live in London for a while, I found out exactly what he meant to the English people. I went to do a play there, and some newspaper sent a reporter over, and they said, without mentioning any names, they said, "We had V-discs of every big American star, but we can thank Fred Allen for part of our morale during the Blitz. His acid wit did more to bring us up than any of the any of the strictly fun shows of other comedians.
Oh, what a nice thing to say.
Yes.
Yeah, to you too. Well, pity we're not heard in Iceland and England and these. I'm sure there are a lot of people curious whatever happened to Mrs. Nussbaum.
Oh, by the way, there was a, in this particular interview that appeared in the paper, the reporter had asked me what some of my favorite characters were, and I mentioned one, a New Yorkese character, who was called Blossom Rappaport. So a couple of weeks later, this paper was on the Kemsley chain and was distributed throughout the British Isles. So a couple of weeks later, the reporter called me to tell me that a woman by the name of Blossom Rappaport had written in from Wales and wanted to know if we were related. Now, it can't be that she mistook the meaning of what I said in the program. I think she was on the lookout for a little publicity for herself, but the reporter wanted to pick it up. He said, would you mind if I brought her into London and we made something of this? And I said, no, it might be fun. Well, he asked me to wait at a restaurant on the day when he went to the railroad station to pick her up. And when she arrived, I found she was a woman in her 30s. She was a brunette, dark hair, blue eyes, and curiously enough, she somewhat resembled me. Now, after we had lunch, the reporter said, I think the photographer is about due now. And when she heard photographer, she disappeared into the powder room for about 15 minutes. This reporter was very much amused. He said, you're the actress, and she's gone into makeup and get ready for the pictures. Well, she explained how she got the name of Blossom Rappaport. She was so pretty when she was born that her father said, she's just like a blossom. And Blossom grew up to marry a man by the name of Rappaport, and that's how she became Blossom Rappaport. Well, she was indeed a publicity seeker.
Well, if she's listening today, she'll be pleased. Now, we've mentioned her name three or four times.
That's right.
Blossom Rappaport. We talked very little before this interview, right?
Right.
You know, and we drifted into it, and I wish we could go on for a long time. You still have a lot of stories to tell. I'm sorry I'm running out of tape. So.
Well, it's been very pleasant for me, too.
It has indeed for me, and I'm sure for the audience. Thank you, Miss Minerva Pius, Mrs. Nussbaum.
Right.
Here's a letter from a gentleman by the name of Michael Lattier inquiring about the great evangelist Amy Semple McPherson, who reigned supreme during the 20s and 30s in this country from her Four Square Gospel Church in Los Angeles. Well, she was a very colorful lady. If you're interested in the details of her controversial career, I'd suggest you get a copy of the new book published by Harper and Row called Charmers and Cranks. The author is Ross. Amy Semple McPherson died of an overdose of sleeping pills in 1944 on the West Coast. Here is a recording of her, one of her sermons made about 30 years ago. Sister Amy.
Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Come, like chiming bells at eventide, this word rings out all through the Bible. Come, in Genesis, come, in Matthew, come, clear through to the Revelation. The word to dominate rings like bells, sweeps as the tones of a mighty harp, peals like the thunderous notes of a great and a glorious organ. Come. It is the invitation from the loving heart of a loving God to a poor, lost, tired, sin-stricken world. Come. Come unto me, all ye that are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. How startled those Galilean multitudes must have been when they lifted their eyes and looked up upon he whom they thought to be the carpenter's son, but who was in reality the very Son of God. How startled, as he stood there in his long, seamless dress of white and opened his wonderful arms to a tired, throbbing world and said, come, lay down your burdens at my feet. Come, pillow your aching head upon my bosom. For in me, even in Jesus the Christ, is the solution for all your problems, the haven of rest for every storm-tossed soul, the pillow of comfort for every weary head. Come unto me, and I will give you rest. Come, just as you are, with your load of sin. Come, stopping not to rid yourself of one dark blot. Come to him whose blood can cleanse each spot. Come, ye lepers, and one touch of his hand shall make you clean. Come, ye who are sick and afflicted, one touch of his hand shall make you every whit whole. Come, come to the feast. Come, for all things are now ready. The Spirit and the bride say, come. Let him that heareth say, come. Whosoever will, let him come.
I'm sorry about all the static on that record, but you know, these recordings are very hard to come by. And when I get them, they're not always in the condition that I would choose. However, that was Sister Amy Semple McPherson. Now, in coming weeks, I have a lot of very interesting people that I'll be talking to on Whatever Happened To. I will read you their names. Irene Wicker, the singing lady. Hal Perry, the great Gildersleeve. Phil Spitalny, of the Hour of Charm fame. And his wife, the lovely Evelyn, and her magic violin. Then that real-life Lolita, Beverly Adlin, the teenage mistress of the late Errol Flynn. The most famous choreographer of early talkie films, Busby Berkeley, will be here in person. A lady who's coming all the way from England, the Evergreen Girl, Jessie Matthews, will be our guest. And possibly, just possibly, Blanche Sweet, the great star of the silent film. I talked to her yesterday morning on the phone, and she said she was very busy looking for an apartment, and she really would like to do the program. She doesn't know when she'll find time. So keep your fingers crossed and maybe we'll talk to her. Because she's very pleasant to speak to on the phone, so I'm looking forward to doing a show with her. How'd you like to win one of those $50 World on a String gift certificates, like a man by the name of Roy Massey won today for suggesting next week's guest? You can use them, as can Mr. Massey, at any one of 11 New York stores. Plummer McCrutchen, the Plaza Hotel, Abercrombie & Fitch. That's three. There are eight others. If you want to win one, send me the name, address, and telephone number of a celebrity from the past, from the category of theater, movies, sports, or politics. And if I use that person on this program, I will send you a $50 World on a String gift certificate. Now, if you're just interested in celebrities from the past, and they can be from any of those categories, just drop me a line, and I will answer you. I'll answer you either on the air, or via the telephone, or in the mail. If you live in New York, I wish you'd include your phone number. It's great help. Write to me, Richard Lamparski. That's spelled L-A-M-P-A-R-S-K-I. At W-B-A-I-F-M. 30 East 39th Street, New York, New York. And I will let you know, whenever I can, whatever happened to those people. Next week's guest. Two, a doubleheader. Two of the famous trio called the Boswell Sisters. The two living girls will be here talking to me next week. Vet and Connie Boswell. Martha passed away several years ago. This is the first interview the girls have done since their sister died. The first in many years. So I hope you'll be with us. This is Richard Lamparski.